Today's program has been brought to you by TechServe, New York's original and still the best Apple computer, iPod, and iPhone store and repair shop. For more information, visit TechServe.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
We talk about food. We talk about music with musical dudes. Finger on the pulse, snacky tunes.
Your silhouette is strong in the dark, but soft in my hand. Look like a picture only to make me mad. Somewhere the green eye called us to step inside. Maybe sleepless nights. Don't go back till you're ready to remember. There's a crack in you leaving me, left to wonder. And with your footprints down on the sand,
welcome to Snacky Tunes. That was just Walls, Left to Wonder. They are hanging outside, recuperating from South by Southwest, which is where Greg is flying home from right now. So you just have me, Darren Bresnitz, half of Finger on the Pulse. Welcome to today on a bitterly cold Monday. I'm being slightly warmed up by the couple fawning over each other. in the courtyard in the corner of Heritage. And shout out to Roberta's and Heritage for making an appearance on Girls last night. Jack, was that you in the studio?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was Jack in the studio. Yeah, a lot of fun, a lot of pride. How I felt about the actual finale? You watch Girls?
I do. I haven't kept up with all the episodes, though.
I won't sell you out because Clarice here did all the gifts for the season opener.
That is right.
It was an odd season. But we have Clarice Lam in here from The Baking Bean, who I found out is her surrogate child and not her actual baby.
No, it actually is my actual baby.
Yeah, you birthed it?
Yeah, I birthed it.
What does the father look like?
It looks like a bean.
Okay. Touche. So, Clarice, welcome to Snacky Tunes.
Thank you. You have
quite the story of how you got from being to baker, as they say.
Okay, sure.
Right?
Yeah, I have many stories.
You were a model at one point, right?
I was a model.
We were talking before the show how you missed the travel model extravagant life.
Oh my gosh, I miss the travel model extravagant life. I miss the sort of lack of responsibility aspects. I can take a job when I want to. I can go somewhere when I want to. I can call out when I want to. Not happening anymore.
Best place you traveled? Best food you ate?
Oh my gosh. I'm going to say the best food that I've had is in Italy, only because I feel like no matter where you go in Italy, it can be like the dumpiest place on the street, but the food is still really good. I think it's really, really hard to find bad food in Italy. Best place that I've been to, or the best place that I've lived, is going to be in Paris. I really like living there.
Is that where you started getting the wheels turning to become a baker?
It is.
So let's talk about that. So you're a model.
Yes.
And I think I heard you had a near-death experience.
I did.
Was that the catalyst?
No. That was not.
Okay. So then what was the catalyst?
So I was living in Paris as
being
a model. I was being a model, and my agency's telling me I'm fat all the time, not to eat.
Really? What would you eat in Paris? What was like a Sunday breakfast, something?
You know, I was one of the ones that was lucky enough to actually, I could eat whatever I wanted back then, because no matter what I ate, I would still be like a size negative one. But now...
I know that problem.
Now it's a little bit different.
Yeah.
But, you know, like my agency would sometimes be like, okay, you really need to like watch your weight. I'd be like, okay, sure. And then I'd leave and then go eat like a big ass croissant or something.
Was that your guilty pleasure?
No, my guilty pleasure was really anything like ice cream or chocolate.
Really? I feel like bread would be the biggest issue in Paris.
It is probably for most people, but I'm kind of like, I really don't eat that much bread.
If I could live on like bread and like cultured butter with salt.
I could live off of cheese.
Oh yeah. Do you eat a lot of cheese in Paris?
Yes.
Did you have a favorite cheesemonger there?
I didn't have a favorite cheesemonger.
Did you have a favorite type of cheese?
I have a favorite type of cheese.
Which is?
It's the Dauphinois right now.
Ooh, that's good cheese.
It is really good cheese.
So you're in Paris. Saying, fuck off, people, I'm as skinny as I want to be.
Yeah. And then, I mean, I don't know. The place that changed my life in Paris was when I went to La Rey on the Champs-Élysées.
Of course.
And that was a really long time ago. I think that was like way before all the macaroon hype. Before that became all like popular and cool. But I was like, what is this? You know?
Did you speak French?
I did speak French. I still do speak a little French.
Can you say what is this in French?
What is this?
Okay.
No. C'est quoi ça? C'est un macaron.
So what was that moment like? I mean, it seems like there was a before and after of who you were in that moment that you had your first macaroon.
So I ate my first macaroon, but not only did I eat a macaroon, I had this like ridiculous sundae with like five macaroons on top of it. It was like this like premium coupe de glace with like all this chantilly and like all these like macarons all over the place and fresh fruit and like sauce and coulis and whatnot. And I was like, I want this
and
every day
like, you only had like
of
a bite
my
of it,
life.
Right?
No, I ate like five of them in a row.
So then how long between that epiphany and then did you start making actual moves to become a baker?
About 8 years, 7 years, maybe.
Still had some modeling left to do?
Yeah, I still had modeling left to do. I had to, like, wait. Okay, I think I exaggerated with the 7 years. It's probably 5 years, four or 5 years.
But during that time, you were. When did you start thinking, like, I see this, I see modeling ending and this next part of my career?
I actually thought about going to culinary school for a good 10 years before I really did. I even thought about it before I moved to Paris. Paris is what made me want to become a pastry chef. But when I lived in Italy is when I started taking courses at the Cordon Bleu. And I took courses for savory Italian cuisine, specializing in Italian cuisine. And that's when I was like, okay, this is amazing. This is so fun. Like, I just want to live food all the time.
Speaking of food, here's some salad.
Salad!
Not as exciting. Not exciting. And so then you actually went and you got classically trained.
I did. And then I got my pastry degree from the French Culinary Institute here in New York City.
Did you train in Paris first?
No.
Oh, so you just came back.
I came back. And then I got my pastry degree from there, which is now called the International Culinary Center.
Yes, it is. So how did you enjoy the program there? I heard it's very intense.
It is. I went for the intensive program, which is almost all of them.
Yeah. Oh, I'm just lightheartedly going to take this class. Any tears or any blowups? Any like moments of like, this was not the right decision to make?
Not at all.
That's amazing.
No, not at all.
Any good stories from there? Any good stories from your time in school?
Good stories. I'm trying to think of some really funny ones, but let me think. No, I can't really think of any.
Nothing? Okay. So you graduate.
Yes.
You graduate. You have your, is it a master? What is, it's your, what's the actual degree?
It's not an actual degree. It's like called a grand diplôme. It's like a diplôme. I can't even say it. What's a diploma in English?
It's a guy, right?
Yeah, it's a guy. This guy. It's like, oh, look, I got this guy on my wall.
Nice.
It's a diplôme.
And so then how long from graduation, or what did you do after that? Did you decide that you wanted to open up a bakery, or did you go out and sort of do some staging?
No, I did. I actually did some staging while I was in school. I staged at Locanda Verde. And then after that, I worked in several other restaurants and bakeries.
But all this time working towards...
All the time working towards something bigger, which at the time I didn't really know what it was going to be yet.
Oh, so you didn't always have a vision of having a store.
I did not always have a vision of having a... I had a vision of having a store eventually, but for me it came a lot sooner than I thought.
Interesting. All right, well, we're going to take a short musical break.
Okay.
Put on some inspirational music from Explosions in the Sky. And then we're going to talk about the baking bean and the awesome chocolates that you brought, which I was saving till after pizza, but I don't know if I can wait.
Okay. Great.
Right, so here we go. Little Explosions in the Sky. I'll be right back here on Snacky Tunes.
Snacky Tunes.
Thank you.
God. Explosion in the Sky. Never gets old. You big fan?
I'm sorry. I was concentrating on munching.
On the salad. So we're here with Clarice Lamb, chef owner, the Baking Bean. So you had staged around at a bunch of restaurants, and then one of the opportunity presented itself to actually have your own show. No, I'm sorry, your own restaurant.
Well,
sorry, I got distracted by pizza. I got totally distracted by pizza.
So I was working at the Chocolate Room mm-hmm. here in Brooklyn. Mm. I was the executive pastry chef of both of the locations of the Chocolate Room. And during that time, I just started making cakes and things on the side for my friends. And it just, like, it just started like that. Like, I thought that I wanted to explore the different opportunities that I could and use flavors that I liked and designs that I liked and do my own kind of creations. And it really just started as like a side project, and then it became something really, really nice.
I would say that the designs are very fun and whimsical and not normal designs that you would see. Can you talk about them a little bit?
Sure. Is there one that you're referencing in particular?
Well, like the three-eyed cookie monster is really amazing.
The three-eyed cookie monster?
Yes.
Yeah, I made that for a friend of mine's baby's first birthday.
Of course.
Yes, and there was like a monster theme, so I was like, I'll make a monster. This is what a monster looks like to me.
Now, and I'm assuming that these are perfect, classically made pastries that taste delicious, but also have that sort of whimsy that you don't find at the more rigid stores.
That's right. That's sort of my goal, because I feel like oftentimes you'll go to a pastry shop or a bakery and you see something and it either looks so pretty that you don't even want to touch it or eat it, or it either looks really, really pretty and then you eat it and then you're kind of disappointed.
What's worse for you? First off, I never have a problem with like going in on anything. I'm never like, oh, that's too pretty to eat.
Well, it's worse for me if I think it looks like amazing and then you bite into it and you're like, meh.
Which I feel like is what so much has happened with pastry and cakes these days, where it's so much about the look, and then it's like, you know, box cake and it's just plaster. I'm going in on these chocolates.
All right.
So what am I eating right
now? So what you have there is my signature chocolate, which is called a peanut butter and jelly s'more.
Of course. Oh, my God.
So it's a take on one of my favorite things when I was a kid, which were those, like, little Malomars that you get in the supermarket. You know, like, my mom used to buy them for me when I was sick. Mm-hmm. It's a peanut butter shortbread cookie at the bottom.
Oh, my God.
It's got some raspberry jam, homemade marshmallow piped on top, all covered with milk chocolate, fleur de sel, and chopped peanuts.
Mm-hmm.
Are you munching?
Mm-hmm. And so you do a lot of these things made to order. Do people come with you, like, with these creative ideas and say, I want to work with you in developing a cookie or a chocolate or something like that, and you create for people?
I create things for people. Usually people will tell me, like, oh, I like this flavor profile. My this X person's favorite thing is this. Can you make something like this? And then I'll sort of put my own twist on it.
What's the favorite thing that you've collaborated with and created?
You know, I actually have this. I have this app coming out, actually.
Yeah.
And it's called Teach Me Chocolate.
Ooh.
So it's going to be coming out in the first week of April. And it's basically a series of videos and still photos that you can download to your Android or iPhone. And it will teach you, but I will also teach you how to work with chocolate.
Is working with chocolate one of those difficult things, or is it easier to work with than one would think?
It is a very temperamental thing. It is very temperamental.
Especially when tempering?
Yes, especially when tempering. Yeah. Especially when it's a different temperature outside.
Oh, yeah. Have you had some chocolate disasters, even as a professional?
Of course. Do you know how hard it is to temper chocolate when it's like a 110 degrees outside with like 50% humidity, a.k.a. every summer in New York City?
A.k.a. every summer. And I've been to your commercial kitchen. It's not one of those climate-controlled
It's not. It's not. It's really, really. It's really hard to temper chocolate in the summertime. In the wintertime, it's much friendlier to me.
And you got a couple. You just got out of the Valentine's Day season.
That's right.
Which I really enjoyed. Your Voodoo, Your Ex Cookie.
Oh, I thank you so much.
Can you explain to the people at home what that was?
Of course I can. So the Voodoo Your Ex Cookie is sort of my take on the Valentine's, on what Valentine's Day is. It's like, everybody's like, oh my gosh, Valentine's Day, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? We have to buy this person this, and you have to buy this person this. And then you go to the stores, and it's all the same thing. It's always just lacy hearts and teddy bears and Cupids and I don't know what else. But nobody ever, like, explores what... Like, what is Valentine's really? Like, I mean, how many people do you know that really actually love Valentine's Day?
I don't think anybody.
You see?
Like, I actually don't think, even the people who enjoy it are just like, even if you love it and you're in love with somebody and you want to go out to dinner with them, you're like, I just don't want to deal with.
Because it becomes an obligation. Yeah. You know what I mean? Instead of like, it's like, why do we have one day a year in which we're supposed to show or display our love? Shouldn't it be like, 364 days out of the year, and then maybe one day you decide that you want to hate somebody.
Yeah. treat every day like Valentine's Day, right?
Yes.
So with the Voodoo cookie, could you buy accoutrement to like stab it in the heart? Like, could you get like extra sprinkles or icing to stab it or decapitate
it? Well, it already comes with a pin going through the heart. So what you do when you get your Voodoo cookie is you can, I mean, if you want to make icing at home for yourself, and then you can like add extra things, or you can decide to like break off the parts that you want to hurt first, or you could like stab.
Did you have an X assigned to your cookie this year?
I did not. I mean, if I did, I'd probably have to have like 20 cookies.
Oh,
just kidding.
You were an international model. You can have, you know, beautiful young woman traveling the world. So you have the app, and what's coming up next for the store? What are you excited about most?
I'm excited about the app. I'm excited about Easter. I'm going to have some nice Easter baskets coming out.
What's in your Easter basket?
Well, it's going to be... Well, I'm going to have actually some of the peanut butter and jelly s'mores.
Okay.
Some iced graham cracker egg cookies.
Nice.
Some raspberry and lychee pate de fruits, like little jelly gummy jellies. And then I'm going to have, I made a peep, my own peep.
I was going to ask.
Yeah.
What's your version of the peep?
So it's like, it's a pretzel and milk chocolate nest. And then there's a marshmallow peep on top that's covered with sugar.
Mm.
And it's really cute.
And what do you do for Passover?
I do like pavlovas, chocolate flourless cake.
Do you do coconut macaroons and not the French kind?
I do coconut macaroons, yeah.
Yeah. When I first realized there was another type of macaroon that was way more delicious than the coconut macaroon, I was very upset about the macaroons I've been eating my entire life.
Did you feel like you've been fooled? Did you feel like you were tricked?
Well, a little bit, because every once in a while, I would hear about my pastry friends being like, these French macaroons. And I was like, what's so great about, maybe they're dipped in chocolate and they're coconut? I don't know. And then this producer I worked with brought some back from Paris, and I was like, oh, macaroons. Okay. I didn't have that epiphany, though. That sent me off to culinary school, though. So if people want to get in touch with you, how do they get in touch with you? What are the nuts and bolts?
So you can go to bakingbean.com.
Awesome.
You can like my page on Facebook, The Baking Bean. You can also follow me on Twitter, The Baking Bean.
Are you active on Twitter and social activities?
I really try to be, but to be honest, I'm not the best at social media.
Alyssa, you got to get her on that.
Alyssa here is my publicist. She's
Alyssa from Ninth Floor. Shout out for
Ninth Floor publicity.
Gotta love the publicist,
Alyssa Goldman,
who can't eat any of this pizza.
That's right.
She's gonna try. Well, I want to thank you for being on the show. Hang out. Band's gonna come on. Wall's gonna be in a second. I'm gonna share my chocolates with them. I'm not gonna eat all of them.
All right. Fine. No, I'm very happy to share.
But we got a couple songs coming up just as we do a musical interlude. One of them is A White Lung, which is a reprise from last week because they're just so good. Here we go on Snacky Tunes. We've got Wall coming up in just a moment. Oh, man. Throwback. One of my favorite past South by Southwest bands, Thunderbirds, are now with From Skulls, White Lung, who seemed like they had a great one this year, opening up that small set. We are lucky enough to be in studio with Walls. Hello.
Hello. How are you doing?
Good. And you just got back from South by Southwest.
Mm-hmm.
You can keep the reverb on.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay. I sound so distant.
Yeah. No, I'm sort of joking. That may not work.
It's off.
Okay. So welcome. How are you?
Good, thank you.
Have you recovered?
We flew in yesterday and our flight got in really late, and then we had a traumatic experience with a cab driver who didn't know where he was taking us and thought we knew and we didn't know. So,
like, what do you, like, he didn't know or he didn't know?
I don't know, but I think he really didn't know because he kept having to stop on the side of the street and, like, jump out and ask people where we were going.
Where were you going?
We were going to our friend's house, which is close to here, but I still don't know the address.
You don't know the address?
I can't remember it, no. I mean, it's written down somewhere, but...
Oh, but you took him to Bushwick, not the city.
Yeah.
He didn't have GPS, anyway.
He didn't have GPS. It was traumatic. So, yeah, we're feeling a little bit, you know, a bit frazzled today.
Little jittered. This pizza helping at all?
Yeah, that's helping.
So how did you like Austin? Was it your first time there?
Mm-hmm. It was my first time there. It was great. It was kind of frantic as well. We didn't actually catch as many bands as we wanted to, because we were just...
How many shows did you play?
We played 6 shows.
That's a healthy amount.
Yeah, so one day we had 3 shows, so we were kind of running around in the van, out of the van. Oh, yeah.
Favorite moment?
Favorite moment was our last show we played was in the church, Presbyterian Central Church.
Oh, yeah,
and
yeah.
It was an amazing venue, and we played with Devendra Banhart and Iron and Wine, and it was perfect. The perfect show. Beautiful sound, beautiful crowd. Yeah, it was great.
Did you guys get some good food when you were down there?
Yeah, we did. Some good food. We've got some burritos.
Nice.
And yeah,
not a lot of burritos from where you're from.
No. Well, you can, but they're terrible.
And where are you from?
We're from London.
Proper London.
Proper Londoners. Yeah.
The Mexican. Oh God, where did I go? I used to go to, when I lived there, Cafe Pacifico.
Is that in London?
Yeah, and I don't even remember. It was awful. It was like $20 burritos that were
really
terrible.
Oh man.
The Mexican scene's gotten a little bit better in London.
Yeah, I don't know. I
don't know.
I don't eat Mexican in London.
No.
No.
No?
Mm-mm.
Have you been enjoying American food since you've been here?
Yeah. We've had some... What else did we have in LA? Again, when we were in LA, we had some street food, some burritos and tacos on the street in a little van, but the guy was saying with us, like, this is better than the restaurants, this little street van.
Yeah.
It was great.
Yeah, street burritos are always the best.
Yeah.
So how much longer are you in the States for?
We're just here in New York now for 5 days. And we have 2 shows, one on the 20th at Rockwood Music Hall and on the 21st in Brooklyn at Glasslands.
Beautiful.
Yep.
That's going to be fun. Why don't you play a song? Why don't you hit us with a tune?
Cool.
What are you going to play for us?
This song is called No Secrets.
Awesome. Well, here we go, Walls Live on Snacky Tunes.
Set your name.
So nice.
Thank you.
That is some nice Monday afternoon music. So how did you all get together?
We got together about a year ago. We had our first show last August. So it's a pretty new project for us, but we've all played in various bands before and together as well. So we've been friends for a long time before we started this band.
Oh, so you just saw each other out on the scene?
Uh-huh.
And what was the scene like in London? What part were you? What scene were you part of?
Well, we all live in West London, so there's a hub of musicians around there, and we studied, we all went to college around there, and then Ollie lived in Leeds for a few years, so, and then some of those guys came to London, and you just, like, the longer you're living in London, you just, the more bands you meet, and the bigger your network kind of becomes.
Is it a tight-knit community?
I wouldn't say tight-knit, but if you can latch into a couple of different pockets, I mean, London's such a massive place that you... If you're playing in the south, you know, none of your friends from the north will come down. If you're playing in the north of London, like, you get a different crowd wherever you're playing in London, basically. And we have friends all over.
That's awesome. What's your favorite place to play in London?
There's a good music scene in East London. There's a couple of cool venues that are springing up around there. My favorite place to play is Bush Hall, which is where we're playing when we get home. We're playing on April the 11th, we have a show there, and it's nice, big, nice size. Kind of, we like kind of more theatrical venues where you kind of have
It's like a homecoming for you.
Yeah, in a way.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So you have the new EP coming out.
Mm-hmm. On April the 1st, we're dropping an EP called Shoestring.
Drop it. What's a shoestring sound like when you drop it?
It sounds pretty great, but we're not playing it today.
Oh, okay.
Because we don't have the setup.
Tell me about the process of writing this EP. How did it come together? Is this what is this the culmination of?
This EP sums up the last couple of years for me. It's quite minimal music. I recorded it in quite a solitary way, just in my home studio. And the guys are playing on it as well. So we all just kind of, we record at home. That's the way we like to do it. Keep things cheap, keep things quick, turning over quickly and not booking into a studio and then like having 2 days and then you're done. We just kind of take our time to record things and write things. It's 5 tracks. They're all pretty different. All pretty great.
Do you have a standout favorite?
My favorite track is probably a song called Plays Too Low, which we can play for you.
Okay, let's hear it.
Sure.
Here we go, Wall live on Snacky Tunes.
Try to keep my thinking down. Took some time to work it out. Never in a place too low. In a house up on a hill. Called out to me that I should know. With a whisper. So I'm
Very nice.
Thank you. Where did that come from?
Thank you, Jack. We have a live studio audience just on the other side of the the glass wall.
Yeah, efficient.
So when you're running by yourself at your home studio, what's the snack situation like?
The snack situation? Well, definitely wine.
Yeah?
Yeah.
What's your favorite wine?
I like an iced Rioja.
Ooh.
Ah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Beautiful.
I don't know my wines very well, so I don't have
Nope. Stop right there. You just got to sell it. You sounded like you sold it right there.
Don't backtrack.
You can't second. Okay. In the wine game, you can't second guess yourself.
Yeah, this is true.
Yeah. So a lot of wine.
Uh-huh. A lot of wine. We're big fans of curry. I think if we're recording a session, an evening session, it needs to have a curry, like a good veggie curry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And does the level of spiciness affect the songs you're writing?
Maybe it makes them more frantic, like the more spice. And actually, no, none of our songs are very frantic. They're all pretty chill.
Yeah, they're pretty chill. Real mellow curry.
Yeah. We all have quite a high spice tolerance. And actually, we're all like massive chicken fans. Like, I don't know if it's very good food, but we're all quite addicted to Nando's in London. So if we
Nando's.
Late gig or a session, like, we'll always go to Nando's.
Yeah, that looks like a guilty pleasure. Have you had some fried chicken yet here in America?
No, we haven't.
Okay, just get someone to take you to Pies and Thighs.
Pies and Thighs? Is it here in Brooklyn?
Yeah, or go to the Commodore.
Okay.
Actually, the Commodore is great.
Yeah, Commodore, okay.
Yeah.
Remember that.
Yeah.
Maybe, yeah, tonight or tomorrow night, we have nights off, so.
Yeah.
We're going to do
they
that.
Serve food till midnight, and their fried chicken is baller.
Amazing. I'm excited already.
Yeah. So what do you got plans coming up? What's the future for Wall?
Well, we've done, before we were out here in the States, we did some touring with local natives around Europe, which was amazing. It's like our first time touring in Europe, and yeah, we had some amazing food in Lyon in France.
Some might say, Candace, you want to the capital of food in France? Lyon?
Sorry.
Lyon, France?
France, yeah.
Food there?
Amazing.
The food there, I haven't been to Lyon.
Oh, sorry to put you on the spot then.
That's right.
But I heard the food there is amazing.
We wanted to find like an authentic French cafe rather than just going to like a chain, and we found this amazing place. They didn't speak very much English, but we had amazing wine, like chilled red wine, which was really nice. Apparently, ooh, that's how they do it with that specific wine. And yeah, we ordered some pretty interesting, very home cooking. Like we had some fish and some, what was it you had?
Tripe.
Dan thought tripe was a fish or something, but it turned out it was intestine.
Yes.
So that was, it was kind of tasty until you thought too much, I think, about what exactly that was, and then it went a bit wrong. If it doesn't kill you
and it's tasty, then you just got to go in.
Yeah, yeah.
So a little bit more touring when you get back. You're gonna go.
Yeah, we hope to do some more touring. We're gonna some studio time as well. Kind of thinking about an album.
Ooh, an LP.
Yeah,
yeah.
Which might happen, kind of not like soon, but maybe possibly autumn. And yeah, definitely some more touring. We hope to make it out to Europe again.
Beautiful. So if people want to find you, I love the Tumblr that you guys have.
Thank you.
A lot of great photos.
Yeah.
And that's a wall100.tumblr.com.
Yeah. And so most of our handles are wall100. SoundCloud is wall100. facebook.com/wall100.
How did you come up with that?
Just because
you wall is taken.
Yeah, it's taken. Every time.
What's the Googability of wall as a band?
I don't, well, it depends where you are, I think, because if you're in the UK and you Google wall, we come up on the first page.
Beautiful.
But I don't know if that's the same in the US.
Probably not.
Probably not, no.
Probably not. And then if they want to buy the album on the EP on the first?
Yep, you can pre-order it right now on iTunes. So you just search Wall Shoestring on iTunes and you'll find it up there, or go to our Facebook and you'll see it linked to. So yeah, iTunes for now. But I think it's going to be on some other places, but I'm not sure yet.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much. And what were the shows again for this week?
We're playing, Wednesday the 20th. Rockwood Music Hall, Stage 2. That's a free show. And then on Thursday, we're playing at Glasslands here in Brooklyn. Early show, 8:30.
Beautiful. Awesome. What are you going to take us out with?
We're going to play a tune called Magazine.
Okay.
We just need to reshuffle really quickly.
Well, Candace, thank you so much. Clarice, I don't know why I called you Candace. I'm sorry. Clarice, thank you so much.
No, thank you.
Thank you for the peanut butter
and jelly
s'mores. I'm going to eat them all.
I hope you do eat them all.
They're really good. And get ready for an Easter deluge once people hear you on the show.
I will. I'm ready.
All right. Well, here we go, Wall. Thank you so much, Snacky Tunes. Tune in next week for our 150th episode with Turing Machine.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.